This is Dental All-Stars, where we bring you the best in dentistry on marketing, management, and training. Here's your host, Alex Nottingham.
Okay, welcome everybody officially to our weekly coronavirus survival webinar series for dentists. And today's topic is clearing the confusion. We have Larry Gazzardo, our head instructor, and just a little background about him. He's a Dawson Academy professor. He is international speaker, just was slated to speak at the Henneman, but obviously we get the benefit of utilizing him here virtually. And wonderful content creator, great person. And we also have Robin Reese. Robin Reese is our VP of coaching. She is also handles hiring for our dentists. She runs a hiring program. She is a HR specialist for Bent Erickson. She's an amazing coach and amazing person. She used to run a very, very large multi-group practice. And that's just to name a few of her great accolades. And so I have these experts here this afternoon to help clear the confusion. We're starting now. Many of you are very familiar with the different governmental assistance out there, like unemployment, the SBA loans, the emergency relief loans, how all those relate. And there's a lot of things that are coming and going, and they'll continue to change. And that's why we're going to continue to offer these webinar series absolutely free until we get back to standard operating procedure. And what I predict is that we will be doing clearing more and more confusion today on this. And what I like to hope to start to move towards is some sense of what do we do during this time. We might get to that today, or that might be a future webinar. How do we start to ramp up and get prepared for coming back and things like that? Just to give you guys some, and many of you know this because we've been seeing the same wonderful people coming to our webinars, is a couple of resources you want to look at. allstardentalacademy.com/survival. That's where we will have post the replays of this and other webinars and resources. We also came out with a new course called Navigating a Crisis. And in that course, we see Larry Gazzardo in there. We see Robin as well. And just to try to systematize some of the things that we're talking about for you. So make sure you take a look at those resources amongst many others. So let's begin in terms of clearing the confusion. By the way, I'm going to open, if you have any questions, just chat them over to me. I'll man the chat box and ask our experts, and or you can use a Q&A box as well, and I'll do my best to man that. And so I guess while we wait for questions to come in, Larry, Robin, in terms of confusion, what's the latest on what's going out? What are potentially confusing areas, and how can we unconfuse the best that we can?
That's like a loaded question.
Rock, paper, scissors, Larry.
Who wants to go first?
So
for example, you just had an email that went out about the confusion. So some of the big confusions, let me lay them out there, and then you guys take a pick and fight for what you want to go for. So some of the confusions that I'm seeing. One is gonna be the SBA loan, the disaster relief loan, how those relate. The big thing is we talked about this yesterday with our member only group, was when can I use this and can I hold it? And do I do unemployment? We hear this a lot. Do I do unemployment first, furlough first, and then this? Do I do this first and unemployment? Do I do both? What's going on if I do it the wrong time? So that's a lot of confusion is timing and what do I
okay,
go after?
Yeah. So let's address that first. Cause I think everyone's in the process of, filling out either their EIDL loan or their filling out for their PPP loan. And there's been some confusion about whether you could have both loans or not. And we've been scouring through all the documents and trying to get clarification. And so this is the clarification that I'll provide, is that yes, you can have both loans. The issue is if you did not get your funds for the EIDL before April the 3rd, what they're going to do is take the funds from the EIDL and the PPP, and they're going to roll them together into one loan. So you can have both loans. You just can't use both loans for the same purpose, meaning they, again, you can't double dip. You can't use the EIDL for payroll and then expect payroll to be forgiven. So they're going to roll those funds into the PPP. They're going to subtract the amount of the $10,000 grant that you're eligible for. Those funds can then be used for payroll 2 months after you receive the loan in that 2 month period. And then you can request for forgiveness of those payroll amounts. So the form that they haven't come out with yet is the forgiveness part. They published an application for you to apply for the loan. It's pretty simple to fill out. It's just your payroll costs times 2.5 times. And that's the amount that they're allowing you. It's all payroll costs up to $100,000. So it's pretty easy to calculate. And they're not asking for a lot of documentation. You can use W-2s to document everyone's wages. So that's the maximum amount of the loan that you can receive. And so you can have both loans. So you don't have to worry that you already applied for the EIDL. If you haven't received it, they're just going to roll that into the PPP. And that's how they're going to do it. So you can have both loans. I'm still saying you should do the same thing. If you get both loans combined together, and I get it that this stuff is confusing, and it's just because, you know, we have to admit we live in the U.S. It's a complex society. You know, nothing is easy, and trust me, this isn't very easy either. But that you use the money that you're getting from the EIDL, use that money to pay for costs while you are still closed down, while your hours are being limited and you're not seeing patients. Then use the proceeds from the PPP portion, use those for payroll after you open. The big question that's been coming up is that the proceeds from the PPP have to be used within 60 days after you receive it. And so what do you do if you're closed right now? Let's say if you got funding today, chances are this is April the 8th, you know what I mean? You've got April the 8th, May the 8th, June the 8th. You've got to have it all spent. Some offices may not be opening until May. Some might even be later than that. So, you know, how do you use that? What I'm thinking is that we're going to get some more clarification from the Small Business Administration. The Treasury Department put out their interim final rule. I guess they're going to have their final rule, and then their, you know, interim, you know, the government does things like this because they're doing things very, very quickly, and obviously they're not able to think out all the details that they should. I think what they're going to do is adjust these dates is what I've been telling everybody. I don't have any verification of that, but I do know this is the one topic that every attorney, every labor person is talking about, that every banker is talking about. And it's, what do I do if I'm in a business where I am actually not working and you give me the money now and you're forcing me to spend it, but I can't use it on the things that are forgivable? I get the sense that they're going to adjust those dates, but they haven't done that yet. I also know that once you apply for the PPP loan, unfortunately, you know, all the banks are just swamped with loans, just like the unemployment compensation people have just been swamped with claims. They can't get to them. So it's probably going to take, it's probably going to take maybe 2 or 3 weeks before your loan actually gets funded. So that's going to give you a little bit of time. And then I would ask your banker, because they have all the control over this, I would ask your banker, you know, can I delay funding this loan? Even if I'm approved for it, can I delay it and get it in writing from them so that you have the funds available once you reopen? Because that's when you're going to be using it for payroll expenses. And it's the payroll expenses that are forgivable. But it's the bulk of what's forgivable. And so you want to be able to use it for those reasons. So if I'm making any sense, yes, you could have both loans. They're just going to roll the EIDL into the PPP loan, and the portion of the EIDL loan is not tax-free, and it's not forgivable. I mean, interest-free. You'll pay interest on that portion of it, and but the part of the PPP loan, or the part of that whole loan together that you actually use on forgivable expenses, which is payroll, mortgage interest, rent, and utilities. And so that portion of it is forgivable, but you've got to spend it within 2 months of actually getting the loan itself. I think they'll adjust those dates, but in the meantime, get with your banker and ask them, can I have a delay on this until we get another ruling on how they're going to handle this. So yeah, I don't know, Robin, how did I do here explaining this?
Well, I have a quick question for you before I go to Robin. And I do have a, is with the EIDL, if you apply, I have a couple questions about this, but if you applied and you're applying for the SBA PPP loan, if you're applying and you have not received the funds yet, what do you state? You state that because you still don't have guidance on that, you just assume it's,
When I filled out the application myself, I filled it out that I did not have the loan because I haven't received those funds yet.
And then they'll contact EIDL and stop that.
Well, because they're going to see that two federal identification numbers are applying for loans. So again, because it's not stated anywhere and it's not in all the pages of all the guidelines that you get from all of them. I'm assuming that they'll know from your federal identification number that you've applied for both loans, and that's why they're gonna mix them together. You'll have the interest rate of the PPP, which I believe is the same interest rate of the EIDL.
Well, and Larry, you did a great job with the explanation of that. And just to share what I've been hearing with some doctors, again, across the country, I've got several doctors that have received their PPP funds.
Okay, that's great.
From local banks, you know, again, great relationships, small banks. We've talked about, you know, the big box that banks that, you know, have actually stopped accepting applications. And I know a lot of doctors are now scrambling to find somebody that will take their application. But several of the doctors that I've been in contact with, one said that, you know, once you accept these funds for the PPP, you have 5 days to accept it. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And then the clock starts ticking, like you said. And so now he's in a dilemma because you know, his bank says you have the funds, you know, you're approved, you have to sign and accept these within 5 days. You know, what do you want to do? And, you know, so now he's trying to negotiate with his banker to say, you know, if I accept it, can I hold it and not draw from it, you know, until I open? Should I use that for my own salary? Again, there's that salary cap, but still could use 2 months worth of rent, utilities, or whatever.
Until he can still spend it on those items. The problem for us is
the forgivable piece.
Right, because your salary is forgivable and your mortgage interest, your utilities, and your rent, that is forgivable. But the bulk of what is forgivable obviously will be your payroll expense.
Right.
And so we want to be able to use it for that. So I get it. This is enormously frustrating because this isn't helping any business that is shut down like a dental practice.
Right.
And so what good does it do for us to have these loans? So, I mean, letting your congressman know.
Right. And I do have also other doctors that are still seeing emergency patients that are specialists, that their GPs are referring, you know, the emergency patients to them to, again, have great relationships amongst colleagues. Also because, you know, they could definitely benefit from the PPP right now. Because they have those payroll expenses, they're close to, you know, quote, normal business operations.
Right.
And then I had other doctors that were able to use a small banker, get the funds for the PPP, and who are willing to hold it and said, listen, you know, hold it for 30 days. If we get the okay to open, then I'll sign the papers and I'll take the funds. But they've actually earmarked those funds for this particular doctor too. So again, it's kind of all over the place. And, you know, I've been on a bunch of webinars, just like you, I'm sure, gathering information and just, you know, understanding that the EIDL loan, the EIDL loan, no one's been funded for that yet, along with that $10,000 grant. Yet there are, as you just heard, that some PPP loans are being funded. So, but they're still waiting to find out the guidelines from the SBA as far as when do we ask for the forgiveness, how do we ask for forgiveness. And so, again, there's still some question marks. I think I even read in the news today that there is a potential of going back to Congress to ask for more money. So, you know, who knows?
My bank had indicated, and I work with Affinity Bank here in Atlanta, the bank here has indicated that Congress, I think it was another $280 billion that they're considering adding to this program on top of the $349 billion that's already been allocated. I had a suspicion that that probably would occur.
You mentioned that before.
Yep. My bank has said that they're already talking about that. I think the phase four plan that's coming up, that is going to be about more of a stimulus package. It won't be a relief package like this, because this hasn't even been rolled out yet. So really, to make this relief package work, they need to increase the amount of funding is what they need to do. And they also need to just change these dates and make it a little bit more flexible. From what I understand, the bank that you work with has the most amount of control on the flexibility. Excuse me. So you really have to go through them to find out if you can hold it off or not. So what I'm playing with now is the fact that, wow, your bank was really fast. If somebody already got the loan in and got it approved and funded, that's phenomenal. What I'm hearing, particularly from my bank, is that it'll probably be a couple of weeks to get this application in, and then it'll probably be another week or two after that. So I'm kind of playing with that fudge period there to push this out as long as possible, and then to see if Congress doesn't come up with, or the SBA doesn't come up with, more clarification on the dates. So right now it's an issue. I would say go ahead and apply. I'm not worried that they're going to run out of money, just because, unfortunately for us, the government can print more money. And they're already talking about applying for adding to this funding that's available. So I feel like that's not going to be an issue. There's going to be plenty of money. It's just a matter of two things. Will they adjust the dates so that we could use it when it's most advantageous to us? It is also true that they are giving banks a certain amount of funding. And let's say, for instance, I had heard Bank A, Wells Fargo, was given $100 million. And so once they had applications that were worth $100 million, they weren't able to accept anymore. What I don't know is if they're going to go ahead and give Wells Fargo some more money so that they can accept more funding, or if they're going to take in more banks that they're going to work with. Again, that's just part of the clarification is there. One thing I do know for sure, that we're talking about money, and I think there's a little bit of overlap here, but it has to do with the federal expansion of unemployment benefits, that extra $600 that everybody's been talking about. And so I have heard that Congress has made the money available to the states, but the federal government doesn't just send them the money. The states have to apply for this money. So they have to say, I want this extra unemployment money, you know, to fund the expansion that you're offering. And so it does mean that your employees may be accepted or determined to get benefits through the unemployment system. And they may get the state benefit, but they probably haven't received the extra $600 that they're talking about, because they've got to apply for that funding, and then they have to get it, and then they can start distributing it. The good thing, though, that I've heard is that they will make it retroactive back to when the employee was originally eligible, but the states have to get the money first. And so it's just one of those technical things that they just said, you know, we're sending states all this money. They have to apply for how much they want.
Right. And I believe just as far as the retroactive, I don't believe it goes all the way back to when they first applied. I think it just goes back to when it was enacted, which is April 1st, I believe.
That's right. Getting, I'm sorry.
Once the act went into effect, right.
Right.
No, I know.
They're making those funds available for just a short period of time. And I think that expires on June the 30th as well.
Correct. Yeah, it's only for a short period of time. And I have not heard from anyone about getting that additional $600. And going back to the state, it's going to be up to them. Do they incorporate it into their state unemployment payment, or are they going to send you a separate check or separate deposit? That's still up for individual choices from the states as well.
Yep,
so
every
there
state.
Is, again, no one size fits all for everybody, which is unfortunate, but we do know that that money is coming. We just don't know when.
Yeah. And I get the sense that it will come, but you're right. We just don't know exactly. We have to admit that things have been moving just at lightning speed. And I can't remember a time ever in this profession where anything has moved this fast. And so it's just, I've never had to pay so close attention to every word that was spoken and how quickly things would change. So
the disclaimer is everything we say today is true today. Tomorrow,
they're changing it. They're changing it. So you can't have both loans. You can't have both loans. if you haven't gotten the proceeds from the EIDL, they are just going to roll that into the PPP. Those funds can be used for anything that you want. I've been telling my clients that I want them to preserve their own cash and use the proceeds from these loans in lieu of using their own savings or their own reserves or whatever. Mostly because a lot of this funding that you're going to get from the government will be forgiven. So unemployment insurance, while you're not able to see patients, and then use the proceeds from the loans from the PPP to pay your employees once you open. In the interim, use the proceeds from the EIDL to pay maybe rent if you haven't gotten that forgiven for a few months, or other bills that you might have. But really try to preserve your own cash while all these other funds are available.
Great. And I'm going to just shift gears for a moment because I saw this in the chat box about how are pregnant employees impacted when they're ready to go back to work when the office reopens. And that's really a medical certification from their medical doctor that will determine how it's going to impact that pregnant employee. And that would be just in any other situation. It's a medical condition. Having a medical note from their doctor saying they're restricted, they're not restricted, they can come back. They need extra precaution. You're going to get direction from their medical provider to guide you as to what necessary steps have to happen for a pregnant employee. So I hope that answers Anna's question.
Yeah, because anything that's related to COVID, all of them require, particularly in the Families First Act, whether they get the sick leave or the medical leave, or even if they're, you are, well, particularly for that, they have to be under a doctor's supervision, that they have to be isolated, or that in fact they do have COVID. So there has to be doctor supervision there. I think to qualify for the medical leave, if you're caring for a child whose school was closed, or maybe their daycare hasn't been able to reopen, then just an announcement from them saying that, you know, they're still not able to reopen because of COVID, that would suffice. So yeah, everything's up to the doctors at that point.
Correct.
What other excitement can we answer for people?
There was a question about, is there a way to check on the application number?
When I went to the SBA, two things. The EIDL, If you did that before the 3rd, then you do that directly through the SBA. And the last time I went to their site, even though I have a confirmation number, I did not see anywhere that I could search to find out the status of my loan. I know that I applied, I'll say probably last Wednesday, maybe Tuesday, but Wednesday at the latest. I have not heard anything about the EIDL. And from time to time, I will look at our checking account, and I'll look to see have they made a deposit, but nothing's there. So I haven't seen anything. For the PPP loan, because that's administered through your bank, they will communicate directly with you. And I'll have to admit the bank was a little bit better. Once I submitted the loan, they contacted me right away saying that they have the application and that they'll keep me posted as to its progress. So that information probably will come directly from the bank and not from from the SBA.
Okay. Does PPP apply to hiring new employees?
I believe that it would, because there's some leeway there. They're telling you that they're going to compare what you were spending before the disaster on payroll, and then they're going to compare that to what you spent in the 2 months once you started reinstating your employees. So it's not a one-to-one matchup. They're just saying that you've got till June the 30th to get your pay right now. They're saying you've got till June the 30th to get your payroll back up to those prior levels, but it's not a one-to-one matchup. You also have until June the 30th to get your staffing. So if when you applied, you said you had 11 employees, and then perhaps you had some changeover or people who decided not to come back to work, you know, because that could happen to us, that what you've got until June the 30th to not only get the payroll back up to that level, but you also have until June the 30th to get your payroll numbers back up to that level. So in my opinion, yes, that would include new people, because it's not a one-to-one matchup. It's just prior levels is what they're talking about. I don't know, Robin, if you see it any differently than that.
I believe what you're saying is, you're right. You know, if Sally was with me before the crisis and Sally chooses not to come back after the crisis, they're really not so concerned about that, you know, Sally and Sally, but just that the number, because you're going to have to replace Sally, assuming
right.
You know, it's going to be your numbers and your dollars are going to be similar or as close to match as possible. If that's what I'm understanding, you're saying.
Yeah. It's not a one-to-one matchup. They're not going Sally before right. and Sally after. They're just right. saying you had an employee who made a dollar. We want to see that you have another employee who's also making a dollar once everything is given the all clear.
Great.
So it's not a one-to-one matchup.
Great.
There was a question that, and I responded to this, is the dentist is part of the employees as well in payroll. They would also be part of that calculation, correct?
Yes. They're actually saying that it's the doctor's compensation. Actually, it's anyone's compensation up to $100,000. And so they use kind of a loose term, compensation, because they say compensation plus benefits, making it seem like, oh, if we have a 401k contribution that we make, it's the $100,000 plus the benefit. It's not. It's all of that
benefits
together, right? Total benefits together, including insurance premiums that you might pay up to $100,000.
So if you're an employee and you're making 70, but then you have additional benefits such as health insurance and whatever, that would add up. You would go up beyond. So, or rather, if you made a hundred grand, the 8.83333 a month, and then you got health insurance and 401k, it would not cover above those.
Correct. And so what I've been explaining to clients is, you know, get out your reports of what you paid somebody, and then, you know, get out your reports that show what if you have a retirement contribution, if you have health care, those are the general benefits that are there. Just add that to everyone's gross payroll. And then anybody who might be over 100,000, just subtract the difference from it. So when you're calculating your total payroll, just subtract that. More than likely, your bank is going to ask for copies of W-2s, or they're going to ask for your payroll summary, because they're going to want to verify that you're claiming the right amount for the loan, so that anybody who makes over $100,000, you're not asking for more. Because when it comes to the forgiveness part of it, you're going to have to again demonstrate that this person didn't make, it doesn't have the annualized payroll of over $100,000, because they're not going to forgive more than that for that person. The payroll also includes individuals that you might be paying as an independent contractor. We don't usually have a lot of that in dentistry, but I'm taking that to mean if you have an associate dentist and they're being paid as an independent contractor, then you would include them. You would include them in your payroll figures. Now, chances are, if you're paying them as an independent contractor, their 1099 is reported under their Social Security number, not their federal ID number. Now we're getting a little bit complicated here, but chances are, if they're working for you as an independent contractor, you're filing a 1099 under their Social Security number. If that's true, then I would include their wages, their 1099 wages, in your payroll costs up to $100,000. If they're filing a 1099 under their own federal ID number, like they're acting like their own corporation, and sometimes this does happen because I'm a dentist, I'm working in your office maybe a day or two a week, but I also work in two or three other offices a couple days a week. Usually those individuals, they have their own corporation set up. And so any money you pay to them goes into their corporation. They're probably going to want to file for their own EIDL or their own triple P loan and not be included in what you're doing. But you're going to have to talk to that individual. Most likely, if you have other professionals like specialists coming through your practice, oral surgeons, periodontists, orthodontists, whatever, usually those individuals, I'm only coming to your office every other week for one day. And so their 1099 is probably under their corporate name and not under their personal Social Security number. So I will make a distinction there. If you have confusion about it, if I'm not able to help you here, then definitely talk to your CPA. But the easiest way to go about it is if the 1099 is under their own personal Social Security number, and they really only work in your office, you know they're not working anywhere else, then I feel like it's safe to include them in the payroll costs, and so that you'll be able to continue to pay them, you know, and have that forgiven through your PPP loan. But if it's through a federal ID number, chances are then they may be working in several other places and they want to file for their own. So you just have to ask them about it.
Let me ask you some questions so I can clear some of this. I'm getting a lot of questions, so let me just get them quickly. So one is asking about that they did not have any contractors or employees the prior year on the books. And so can they ask for something now to be covered, payroll?
Well, you know, for new businesses, you can just look at the period from January 1st to February the 15th. And so my sense is,
if you have something, but if you have nothing, let's say you have nothing from now to before, but you're going to add later, that's not going to, because they're going to want to see some history.
Right, right. Because they're looking pre-disaster and then, you know, after the disaster is kind of the way they talk about it.
Okay.
So that, you might have to talk specifically with your CPA, but unfortunately, if you didn't have anybody to re-employ, because that's what this is all about, is bringing everybody back.
Because that's more of a stimulus, meaning trying to get more jobs going concept. What the government's looking to do is get you from pausing to back. So they're looking to where were you and to restore. It's a different concept. And going back to what you were saying in the question, 1099 temporary employees or hygienist assistants, those you can include in your payroll calculation, right, Larry?
Yes, yes.
And you could get money to pay those contractors as well.
Right. And I know that you'd be safe if they have you file their 1099 under their Social Security number, because chances are they're probably only working for you in that situation. But if they have their 1099 set up under a corporate name, then they may be working for several different people. And if they have their own corporation, they can file for their own triple P loan. And so you can keep them out of it. That's usually the distinction that I would make, but you have to talk to that person to find out for sure. Getting back to because I was just looking at all the paperwork I have here. The person who didn't have any employees, they also have special rules for seasonal people as well. And so, you know, looking at the guidelines that they put out for seasonal employers might be helpful for this person who didn't have employees last week. Because if you're a seasonal employer, maybe you're only open in the summer, they might have a longer look back period for that person.
What's an update? Just curious on the paid family medical leave with respect. I know the ADA and others were, it was pushed off or postponed under 500 employees. Is that still operative?
Well, there was no exemption, an official exemption. The point is, if you've laid off your employees or your business is closed, it doesn't apply. So you don't have to worry about that. It's really where it comes into play is for those offices that are still open, still have people coming in on a regular basis on how they qualify.
So if you're doing emergencies and you still have somebody who hasn't been furloughed and they get coronavirus or the family member, now the government is expecting you to cover
or the child care is closed. Again, there are very specific reasons as to when this will apply. But again, if you're open and doing, you know, emergency care because you're a specialist, the exemption is you're going to have to go to your state's Department of Labor to seek an exemption if it's going to create a significant financial hardship. And again, it's a state by state basis on if they feel that, you know, if you've already gotten a loan, if you've applied or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of extenuating factors here, but there was no official blanket exemption for those dental practices that are still open that haven't laid off their team members. This would still apply to you unless you go to your state for an exemption for under 50 employees, documenting hardship, or if there was no other person who could do your job, and things like that. So again, I'd go back to your state.
Yep. The only other thing that I heard is that the ADA did apply for an exemption. I hadn't heard that
it was granted. Correct.
You know, we don't know. So it'll be a case by case basis. The only good thing, I don't like those words. If you have to pay out either the sick leave or the medical leave, you will get a credit on that quarter's 941 tax return.
Right.
And they do say that if you paid out more in medical leave or sick leave, you know, than in taxes collected, they would send you a refund check, just like they would do right now. So at least that will get clarified at the end of the quarter. The problem with the medical and the sick leave is that very few people actually qualify for it.
Right.
Because like Robin had said earlier, there has to be a physician involved here, that you've got COVID, you're caring for somebody with COVID, you know, or you've been ordered to isolate by a physician, or they can't come to work because the child's sick, or, you know, I mean, the school was closed or the daycare is not open. And so each office is going to be a little bit different. But the thing that will be helpful is that if you have to pay it, then at the end of the quarter, you'll get reimbursed for those funds that you put out.
One thing I wanted to mention too, again, shifting a little bit of gears, because we were talking originally about, you know, confusion and getting clarity. I know that teledentistry has been a big push about, you know, having practices that are closed, that aren't going in and seeing patients, that are trying to do some triage over the phone or over the computer. And I've discovered and learned that it's not a simple solution, because teledentistry is not governed by a legislative body like the ADA. It is governed by each individual state's board of dentistry. So I know that there are a handful of states that do have laws, statutes, and provisions that allow for teledentistry. Also, you know, very specific rules about patient protection, PHI, you know, how do you bill it if you want to bill it? And those states are Massachusetts. As of October 2019, they had some legislation pending. California has laws, Arizona, Ohio, Oregon, South Dakota, and Tennessee. So those are the states that we know that are allowing and already have laws and statutes and provisions in place for teledentistry. So make sure you check with your state to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. But there are other states, for example, Texas, that their state board of dentistry does not approve or does not allow teledentistry. So as much as it's an amazing opportunity for practices in states that allow it, it's something new. And I think we're going to see more and more legislation go through after this to allow for that and for insurances to recognize and bill for it. But again, it's not a simple one size fits all in this particular case. So I know that some people have said, hey, yeah, we've been doing it. It's great. Insurances are starting to reimburse, and other practices are saying, well, wait a minute, we can't do a thing, because our state doesn't allow us. So I know that that was one piece of confusion that has come up on some webinars that I've in forums that I've been a part of. And I also know that the ADA did come out with their own policy on teledentistry back in 2015. But and those handful of states that I mentioned have followed along and implemented in their own states, but not everybody has. So I just want to make comment about that.
Yep. So that was a really good comment. So the caveat that I'm hearing here is whether you can actually charge for it or not.
Correct. The form in which you deliver it too, like, yes. You know, FaceTime. And a lot of doctors have said, you know, gosh, I've been doing FaceTime or Skype just to check in with my patients, or if they had a quick question they wanted to show me, you know, oh, look at this. They would do it on Facebook or FaceTime. But that's, you know, and of course they're not billing for it. They're just doing it. So again, that does kind of get into the gray area of that protected health information and HIPAA and, you know, privacy. That's, you know, FaceTime's an open, you know, channel. So,
it's not encrypted. So,
right. So you have to, again, check with your state board on what provisions and restrictions are in place.
But if I just wanted to talk to a patient and just ask them a few questions or whatever, and I'm not billing for it, do you think I would be in violation? Is it really the billing issue that gets us the biggest concern or maybe into trouble? Like, let's say, for instance, if a person calls me on the phone and I ask, well, when you press down for temperature, when I do that, that's not teledentistry, but it kind of is. And as a dentist, I might be deciding whether I think I need to see you or you need to go to a specialist. I might also be deciding, hey, you need a prescription.
Well, teledentistry, is it, because Larry, you sent me with the codes and so on from the ADA, that's in terms of being able to be doing billing. But if you have a client or a patient that needs your help, are you saying some states will not allow you to even contact, I would assume they would allow you to contact them via Zoom, a protected method to give them free consultation, right, Robin?
No, actually.
Yeah. Really?
They're
saying you cannot diagnose, you cannot make recommendations over the phone or all that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, there's a difference between what constitutes an exam, right?
Okay,
and
I see.
What constitutes an assessment. Now,
I see.
You know, since the beginning of time, we've all, you know, taken emergency phone calls, right?
You send an antibiotics or something, like pain over
right,
the weekend,
you know,
or whatever.
Existing okay. patient, whatever. Okay. You're doing okay. an assessment, but you're not visually looking. When you are looking, then it can qualify as an exam. Forget the billing part of it. It's just, okay. Are you practicing dentistry, you know, in a virtual environment, and does your state board approve of that?
Yeah. So it sounds like the best thing to do then is to check with your state board.
And by the way, in terms of adding one layer of confusion or to clear the confusion, we're speaking very broadly. We're speaking on a generic cookie cutter situation that will apply to most people, but every state has a different situation. Every business is a different situation, right? So I just want to, because I get a lot of questions coming and I'm trying to answer them, but again, they're gonna really differ based on your state, based on your situation. And also keep in mind, we're not lawyers in your state, we're not CPAs in your state, we're not giving legal advice. We're not giving specific HR advice. We're giving general our interpretations of the platforms of what's being out. And these are experts, by the way, but you have to still do your own due diligence based on your situation.
And that's a great point, Alex. The information that we've been sharing has all been documented. We've verified it. Sure, we might offer our opinion, but most of the information that Larry's been going over, information that I've been going over when it relates to human resources is all verified, documented information. But again, we don't know your situation, so we're going to give you best practices, what we know other practices are doing, other success, other results. And again, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, exactly. excellent. So we talked about...
What other questions do you have for us?
Well, so just to kind of review, we talked about the emergency loan, EIDL. We talked about the SBA loan, PPP. We talked about a little bit about the family medical leave situation. We talked about teledentistry. Let me kind of look at some of the questions here. So Larry, there's a question here about employees who have to homeschool. Do you have to pay them? Would that fall under that medical leave situation?
If, and Robin will verify this, if they're homeschooling because their school, the way I understand it is if the child cannot go to school because it is closed due to the coronavirus, you know, shutdown, or because the daycare is closed and that's why they have to do it, then they would qualify. The Family Medical Leave Act is all about coronavirus. And if coronavirus is not involved, from what I understand, that would not apply. So if it's just simply a child that is being homeschooled, because the parent's choice, I want to homeschool my child.
That's one thing. But if most school, the situation at this time, most schools are shut down,
right.
that is because of the coronavirus.
Right.
Now you would be responsible.
It only applies
okay.
if the business is open.
Ah.
If the business is closed and the employees on layoff,
there's an unemployment.
Furlough,
right.
It doesn't apply.
What if you're seeing emergencies?
Again, most because you're not open
but
normal
if you,
business
but if you
hours.
Structure,
unless you're a specialist.
Specialist, right. It's different.
Who's
but if
having
you,
normal hours, who's seeing patients
right,
on a regular
right.
basis.
Okay.
If you've laid off your employees or furloughed your employees and you're only calling them in on certain situations, certain emergency patients, maybe just coming in to, you know, an hour a day to answer the phone or, you know, do whatever. And the business is closed and you're only open for emergencies only, most GPs, then it would not apply because the business is closed.
That makes sense. And therefore they would use unemployment to satisfy their needs. So that makes a lot of sense. Again, from a policy perspective, business is closed. But if you're a specialist, now I'm just thinking kind of for a situation, if you're a specialist and you were open most of the time, because you might, many specialists are cutting back a bit.
You probably have reduced hours.
But you sure. wouldn't furlough everybody. I mean, but although some specialists, here's the thing though, some specialists have furloughed everybody, waited, brought some back, but they're still operating at 70%. Then would the government might look at that, I'm just wondering here, they might look at that as you are essentially open. And therefore this is an employee under your realm, not a part-timer. And therefore, there would be more protections, i.e., you would have to pay them, or I guess you just would they would get unemployment. But again, the idea with unemployment, we talked about this before. If you are paying your employee after there's a furlough and you're paying them part time, you're going to report, as Larry said, and Robin, you're going to report as a dentist, and they're going to report to unemployment, and that's going to offset what they're getting.
Yeah.
So they will be made whole
thresholds.
At the end. There are thresholds. Oh, tell me about this.
Right. Well, there are thresholds. You know, if your normal work hours are 40 hours a week and you're working 30 now.
Okay.
The government's going to say, no, you're working.
yeah. You're not
part-time. You're not, okay. you know, unemployed. You've had a reduction in hours because of
good
the COVID.
Point.
then the Family Medical Leave Act, the extended one, the sick leave, that would still apply. But if you normally worked 40 hours and you only work five and you've been laid off, then no, the Family Medical Leave Act and the sick leave doesn't apply because the business isn't open. You're not working your, you know, normal.
Is the threshold 30 hours? What is the threshold?
I'm sorry?
What is
well,
the threshold?
Each state is going to be different as far as what they view as unemployment and what is considered reduced hours.
That's a good point.
But I think, again, the idea that the governor's orders are in place, what's essential, what's not essential, and, you know, is the business open?
That helped clear the confusion a bit. So what I'm hearing, that's a really good point.
So.
But at the end of the day, I mean, it's, and I think all of you listening, you want to make sure you're not, as a business owner, that you're not in financial trouble, and your employees aren't in financial trouble. And so what I'm hearing here again is, if you're working basically full time or near 30 out, whatever your state is mandating, that there has to be some protections because they're not going to get unemployment. And if something happens, right, they have to be made whole. So either it's a family medical leave or it's unemployment. It's a government benefit to work it out. And there's different. So again, what we're seeing here is there's many scenarios, and we're going to keep doing this every week. We will have a recording. People are asking about that. We're live on Facebook, so you can watch the replay on Facebook. I'll have in a day or two it on our website. I'll even make a link in our survival area where we can access this. We'll keep doing this every week. We'll keep building on it. But again, you have different weapons or possibilities. You have government assistance in terms of unemployment. You have the SBA PPP loan, right? You have the emergency relief situation. There's others as well, and provisions that can be used. So you're just becoming aware and utilizing them mindfully. So I'm going to stop it here because the questions will just keep coming. Thank you all for joining us. And again, I'll have the recording, and a lot of questions you've asked, we have answered them before. Check out some of the on alsodentalacademy.com and alsodentalacademy.com/survival. You'll see we post the replays. I did several interviews with Robin, with Larry, with Adrian Twigg, and a bunch of different links that can kind of familiarize yourself. Now, keep in mind, I'm still keeping some of the older webinars operative in the replays. Some of the data is still older, but most of it is still good stuff and still speaking to the same. 80% of this or more is still the same, the way the government's working, the way these things go. It's just these nuances keep changing. So that can also be helpful as well. I want to thank Robin Reese, VP of Coaching, Also Dental Academy, Larry Gazzardo, head instructor, Also Dental Academy, and myself. I'm just the CEO, but I'm here to the host. And everybody be well, be safe, and we'll see you in a week. And until next time, go out there and be
an all-star.
Bye.